This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you from our Lexington, Kentucky studio. I want to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 220, XM 206, and to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides assistance to disabled riders who have given everything to the sport. And if you are able to help, please visit the website www.pdjf.org. Tonight, we are joined by a fresh face, an apprentice rider who has been making quite the name for himself already, riding on the Maryland circuit. He's only been riding a few months, but the wins are quickly stacking up, and we are joined tonight by jockey Lane Luzzi. Lane, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have this hour to spend with you, Lane. And like I said during the intro, you're fairly new to the sport as far as riding professionally anyway, but you have strong family ties to the sport. And let's start off by telling our audience about that.
Well, I've grown up around horse racing my whole life. My dad, he's a jockey. My uncle was a jockey. My great-grandfather was a horse trainer, so the game's been in my blood my entire life, and I've just, from the beginning, I've always wanted to be a jockey. I really had no other ambition to do anything else, so I found myself at the track every weekend growing up, and just, I shadowed my father every morning at the races, whatever I could get my hands on in horse racing, that's what I wanted to do.
And your father, quite the example and mentor. He has won over 3,400 races himself, of course, Mike Luzzi, we are referring to, and winner of the Eclipse Award for Top Apprentice back in 1989. His list of accomplishments are very, very long. And what was it that your father taught you early on?
Well, you know, besides just riding horses in general, he taught me how to handle myself on and off the racetrack. A big part of being a jockey is just being able to talk to people and, you know, sell yourself to the best of your ability. So from a young age, I was at the track in the morning talking to trainers, talking to owners, just, you know, telling them that this is what I wanted to do. And, you know, now I'm in the position that I am a jockey. He's kind of just my mentor. After every race, he gives me a call or a text saying, you know, this was good, or maybe you could have did this a little bit differently. So he helps me in any way I can, really.
You started out early on riding the Equisizer in the jockstroom from a very young age. And did anyone else besides your father kind of pull you aside and give you pointers?
You know, a bunch of people. I mean, a lot of other jockeys. John Velasquez being one, he would see me on the Equisizer a bunch of times, and he would come over and offer his advice. Edgar Prado's another one. So a bunch of the old-time riders that I grew up watching, they would always offer up their advice. And, you know, some of them I look up to even till today, and being able to ride with some of them now, it's very cool. Kendrick Carmus being one of them, when I rode a race with him a few weeks ago, it's just kind of cool looking back, being able to say, you know, hey, I grew up watching these guys. So They still stand as my role models, but now they're my competitors. So it's really cool to be a part of.
Absolutely. You mentioned Kendrick Carmouche. Kendrick is a very good friend of mine, and he helped me during my early years as well, during my career. And along with riding and going to the track with your father, you all also had to see some of the difficulties that come with the sport, and one being the injuries that your father suffered. And he's been through a long list of injuries. And did that make you second guess your career choice at any point?
Honestly, it hasn't. My dad recently, actually last November, he had an injury where he shattered his pelvis and he broke his femur in two places. And I just happened to be at the track with him that day. And I even was in the ambulance with him on the way to the hospital. So, you know, my dad has had quite a few injuries in his career, but I think it's been a motivating factor for me that he's always made it back, and he's never second-guessed himself for making it back. So, you know, I understand it's part of the game. It's, you know, it's inevitable. It's not if, it's how bad and when. So I block it out the best I can. I think I can say the same for my father as well, but I can't say I ever second-guess myself. This is always what I wanted to do.
You say block it out, Lane, and that's something I think every jockey knows how to do, because we can't really dwell on the fact that injuries are inevitable. And tell our audience, how do you block it out when you're literally sitting aboard a 1,200-pound animal going 35 miles an hour among a field of 10, 12? How do you block it out?
I think it's just my will to win. I'm a very competitive person. I like to win. I don't like to lose. I mean, that's something you also have to learn as a jockey. You're not going to win every race. So, I mean, when those gates open, anything could happen. I just focus on riding the best race I can, trying to get everything out of my horse. And, you know, you do the best you can to keep you and your fellow riders safe. And, you know, at the same time, you are trying to win the race. So there are some things that, you know, maybe you're putting someone a little bit tight in the race, maybe in a tight spot, but you're always taking care of yourselves. And I think if every jockey in the race has that same idea, that we end up okay.
Well said, Lane, well said. And so you grew up with your father, so it's in your blood, and you were raised at the racetrack. So when did you actually decide that this is exactly what I want to do, and when did you start getting on horses?
To be honest, I never even was on a horse until I turned 16 years old. The day I turned 16, trainer Abigail Asset, she let me gallop one of her horses out on the Belmont Pony Track, and that was kind of my test run to see if this is really what I wanted to do. My dad said, put the horse on the fence and hang on, and he ran off, and I got down there like I've been there my whole life, and, you know, I had the time of my life, and I never looked back. So from the beginning, that was my test run, and that was definitely an experience I won't forget.
That's hilarious, Lane, and that's the first horse you gallop on the track gets run off with. You know, that's kind of one of the more frightening experiences, I guess, you could experience as a rider. That just feeling of no control. And it sounds like you handled yourself very well. that's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's funny because it was on the pony track at Belmont. It's a 2-furlong track. So I guess my dad was just testing me to see if I really had the guts to do this.
Well, you showed him. You showed him.
Did
you
grow? For sure.
Did you grow up right there near Belmont?
I grew up actually half a mile away from Belmont, so that's really home for me. So I used to go to school, and as soon as I got out of school, I'd catch the last 5-4 races at Belmont.
How about later on in your high school years? Did you turn to galloping horses?
My first 2.5 years of high school, I went to a private school. It was actually an hour away, And during that time, I still wanted to be a jockey, but, you know, I was also being pushed by a lot of people just to go to college because I was really smart in school. I got good grades. I didn't put the work, of course, because, you know, I wanted to be a jockey and just I had my mind on other things. But my half of my junior year and senior year, I went to the local public school, which is literally right across the street from Belmont Park. And my classes started at 10:15, so I'd go ride 7-8 horses for Kieran McLaughlin, and I'd head right on over to school.
Wow. Busy morning. Busy morning.
Yeah, it was busy, but, you know, you do what you got to do. I enjoyed every minute of it.
So after that first horse that ran off with you at the Belmont Pony Track, and then you ended up galloping horses for Kieran McLaughlin, what happened between the time? Who kind of taught you and took you under your wing on how to properly gallop a horse?
Well, actually, I met Joe Sharp, who at the time was the assistant for Michael Maker. And, you know, we became good friends. And I told him, you know, I'm trying to learn how to ride. I want to be a jockey. And apparently he's taught a lot of other people how to gallop as well. So he ended up putting me on a few easy horses to gallop just to get my feet wet, see where I was at. And as I progressed, I got on a lot of different kinds of horses just to learn. And by the end of the summer, after Saratoga, you know, I was a pretty good rider. So when he went back to Kentucky, I stayed with Maker at Belmont Park. And then I worked for Tom Morley for a little while, and that's when my dad got hurt. So I took a little bit of time off before coming back to work for Kieran.
What was it Joe Sharp taught you early on as far as how to maybe get a horse to relax, or just the very beginnings of learning how to become a good horseman?
Well, he did teach me that a lot of getting your horses to relax is to relax yourself. And, you know, it's something I picked up quite easily, actually. You know, sometimes you just got to, you know, let the horse be a horse, do what they want to an extent. You know, a lot of people, when they're first learning, you know, they want to take a hold of a horse from the beginning. And sometimes you just got to let them go. You got to let them be a horse, and you can't take that away from them. Otherwise you're going to fight them and you're going to lose that battle.
You mentioned Saratoga, Lane, and that's, of course, one of my very favorite spots. Did you spend a lot of time at Saratoga with your father?
Actually, this summer, upcoming summer, is going to be my first summer. I'm at Saratoga, so I've been going up there my whole life for the meet, of course. And our family owns a house up there, so we've been going up for years, even in the off season, in the winter, whenever we could get up. We love it up there, so it's going to be real weird not going up this summer.
Oh, yes, and like I said, Saratoga is one of my very favorite spots, as I'm sure many horsemen love going up there. And Lane, you say you won't be riding up there, but why did you decide to, you're currently riding in Maryland, why did you decide to start there instead of the New York circuit?
You know, a lot of apprentices do well in Maryland. It's been a history for this place, of course. A lot of Eclipse Award-winning jockeys and just good riders in general have came out of Maryland, so it seems like the horsemen, they give the apprentices a shot to learn, and that's how we just wanted to get started. We wanted to get started off on the right foot. New York is a little tough. I mean, it's just how it is. Good riders, good trainers, and I just thought there'd be more opportunities for me in Maryland to get started off with. Of course, I could go to Penn National at night. I could go to Parks Monday, Tuesday. So there's also more opportunities to ride.
I remember that circuit. Very, very busy, I'm sure, Lane, riding all over
yep.
the country. Yeah, night, day, night. But, so you're galloping horses for Kieran McLaughlin and Joe Sharp and Mike Maker. And when did you decide that you were at that point where you were ready to ride?
You know, it's kind of funny because I never really did. It was all kind of up to my dad. And, you know, we've discussed it at times. I guess I felt like I was a lot ready before I maybe was, because, you know, you do it every day, 7 days a week, and, you know, you're doing a good job. You figure, you know, where can I go from here? But, you know, I'm glad I stuck it out, finished school, which is what I planned on doing. And then one day my dad came up to me and said, you know, I think you're ready to ride races. He set me up with my agent, Scott Silver. And then, you know, here I am now. So it was a quick process.
Here you are, Lane. And prior to actually taking out your apprentice license, did you have to lose any weight? Was that ever a difficult thing for you?
No, I'm very, very light. I could, just a few months ago, I was tacking 105. I really tack whatever I have to now. I weigh about 103 pounds, so weight was never an issue. I'm one of the lightest guys in the room. But, you know, even growing up, you know, I ate whatever I want. I took care of myself the best I could. But it was never, you know, you can't eat dinner or breakfast one day, even now. I mean, I eat pretty good. I stay healthy the best I can, but I'm naturally light as well as my dad.
That's very good to hear that you do it the right way, Lane, because that's the key to a very long and successful career, of course. And so you decide to go to Maryland with Scott Silver. I'm very familiar with Scott. He's a very, very good guy there in Maryland. And so you make the move. You move from New York to Maryland. And what was your first impression of Maryland?
Well, I've been here before, just traveling with my dad when he came for a couple steak races. But, you know, I did like Maryland. I was set up with a few people who were going to give me an opportunity early on. Of course, the Gaudettes, Tim Keefe, Gary Capuano, just to name a few people. And they were all good to me. They were all supportive of me. They gave me great opportunities early on. So I felt right at home, and I was just glad to get off on the right foot when I first came here.
You mentioned the Gaudette family, and of course, Eddie and Linda, wonderful people, and I hear that Lacey Gaudette actually gave you your first mount.
Yep, she gave me my first mount aboard Blimey, and you know, that's definitely something I'll never forget, and I have to thank her for that, because you know, it's just funny the way you picture your first race now that I've ridden a few hundred races. You just see things so differently after you come out of the gate now, to put it in perspective. There's just so much going on in your first race, and you really can't put it into words. But now that I've, like I said, I've ridden a few hundred races, you break out of the gate, and, you know, you see the race differently in front of you than you would in your first race.
You're exactly right, Lane. Everything happened so fast that first time. I remember the very first race I won. I didn't even know if I won. It was a photo finish. I couldn't tell. It was all a blur. And as you ride, you learn to, things come more slow. I don't know. That's the best way I can put it. And I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. But before you rode your first race for Lacey Gaudette, how long were you in Maryland? How long did it take to work horses in the morning for the trainers? How long did it take to actually get started?
I want to say about 3 weeks, close to 3 weeks. You know, Scott had me Pimlico. He had me at Laurel, just trying to get myself familiar with the place, familiar with the people, just to get my name out there, let them know that, you know, I'm here, I'm going to get started. And, you know, it was good that we waited a little while just so I could, you know, become familiar with the track, become familiar with the people, and just create opportunities for myself before I got started.
Jockey Lane Luzzi joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And Lane, when you first arrived in Maryland, and you're already set up with Scott Silver, did Scott take you aside and give you any tips, any pointers?
You know, he just said, just be respectful to people, work hard, you know, go out every morning and just make yourself available. Don't don't be seen just standing around doing nothing. Try to get on as many horses as you can. Just do the best job you can and offer up some advice for the trainers.
Would you spend time watching the races there in Maryland before you actually started riding?
Yeah, I was there every day. I'm the type of person, when I go to the races, I like just to be alone, just to look at the races the best I can. One thing I like to do when I go and watch, I like to look at one jockey for the whole day, and I like to see how he or she rides the race, how they ride a speed horse, how they ride a horse coming off the pace, or even a closer. And I got to say, it definitely helps you riding with these people now. You can come up with a game plan before the race, and you may know, you know, what he or she is doing. If he may go to the lead with this horse, or he might take back. And it's, like I said, it's definitely helped me now that I'm riding with them.
Of course. And so you know how the other riders ride, but did you look at them and pick out anything that you used later on during your career as far as a riding style or maybe something that did during a race?
Well, I've always looked to my dad just the way I like to ride a race. I think my dad rides a very smart race. I think he's a great finisher. I think he's been doing this long enough that he knows how to do this the right way. And I look to some of the veterans in the room. I look at Julian Pimentel. I look at Horacio Caramanos, just to name a few. And I think they ride very good races. They ride smart races. So I just think they're people to look at to try to imitate.
Did those veteran riders help you out in the beginning? Did they kind of take you aside and offer you advice?
Yeah, they still do. Actually, Julian Pimentel, he's in my corner in the jocks room. And we look at the program every day together. We talk about, you know, maybe what I should do in this race. Of course, if he's not in the race, he gives me advice. But, you know, other than just being competitors with me, he's been a big role model to me, and he's been a huge help.
You mentioned your corner, and I know what that means, but maybe our audience doesn't. The jocks room is one of a kind as far as a locker room for competitors. Everyone's elbow to elbow with the people they're competing against, and you know, tempers can flare and it can be kind of a stressful situation at times. But describe to our audience exactly how the jocks room is set up.
Well, the jocks room is set up, of course, you have your valet, and your valet has 2, 3, 4 jockeys, and you're all, when I say corner, you're all basically next to each other in the locker room. Normally, of course, your competitors in other sports, you'd be in a different locker room, but being all in the same room, it's very different. Like you said, it could be stressful. You're literally sitting next to your competitors that you're trying to beat on a daily basis. So it's interesting. It's different, but as much as we are competitors, we all are very close.
So, Lane, you're riding your first race for Lacey Gaudet, and you're making the rounds at the tracks in Maryland, and you're trying to just get your name out there. And before long, you find yourself on a horse by the name of Flo's Strawberry. And tell us what happened in that race.
Well, Flo's Strawberry for Jamie Ness, we broke out of the one hole, and I really just wanted to get her out. From, of course, being from the one hole, I just wanted to get a clear lead. She runs her best when she's got the clear lead, so that was kind of my game plan going into the race. And, you know, before I knew it, at the 3/8 pole, we're about 6, 7 in front, and I'm still sitting on a lot of horse. So I waited as long as I could, and when I asked her to go, one of the jockeys in there who rode her, he told me that she really wasn't fond of the whip, so don't beat her up too much. Just go to the hand ride as much as possible, and, you know, you should get a clear lead and win. So that's exactly what I did, and we ended up winning by a nose. And I made a mistake in that race, actually. I stood up, like, a few feet up before the wire, and that was just something that will stay with me forever and something I'll never forgive myself for. But, you know, being so green, it's something you're going to do. you see other people do it. So, you know, I think the fact that I won my first race and did that, nearly won, it really taught me that I will never do that again.
Exactly. And you say you'll never forgive yourself. Will Lane, that was your first win. I think it's okay, but definitely something you will never forget. And of course, you said for trainer Jamie Ness, who's an outstanding trainer, and has he given you more opportunities since that win?
Yeah, I've actually ridden a few races for him. I haven't won for him again, but, you know, I've ridden some horses over there at Pimlico for him, and, you know, hopefully we do some more business once the summer comes around. But, yeah, he has given me more opportunities.
Actually, Lane, that same day on December 4th, 2015, you not only won your first race, but you also won your second race.
Yes, I won a board Ready It for Gail Patty, and that was, I rode two horses that day. I rode, I believe it was, I'm not sure which race Flo Strawberry race was, but it was earlier in the day, and I had to wait till the last race to ride Ready It, and I guess you could say now it was worth it because we came from dead last. We were going the flat mile, and she broke her maiden that day. But she came about six wide around the turn, and you just have that feeling when you know you're going to win a race. And I was, like I said, I was sitting on a lot of horse, and when I asked her to go for me, I knew we were going to get up right at the wire. So making my mistake earlier in the day, this kind of made up for it. And I really didn't. It really didn't hit me that I won a race until I won my second career race. So that was kind of the icing on the cake.
Very good day for Lane Luzzi. We'll continue our visit after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Manuel Franco had a solid week at Aqueduct, highlighted by a win in the Cicada Stakes aboard Lost Raven. Franco consistently came in the money on 50% of his mounts, finishing the week with 5 wins, 2 seconds, and 3 third place finishes. Junior Alvarado moved his tack down to Gulfstream for the weekend and won the Sanibel Island Handicap aboard Harmonize. Alvarado impressively won 40% of his mounts and finished the week with 6 wins and 4 second place finishes. James Graham had a solid closing week at the fairgrounds as he led North America in wins and won the Crescent City Oaks aboard Our Lady Alley. For the week, Graham finished with 10 wins, 4 seconds, and 6 third place finishes. Finally, the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Florent Giroux, wrapped up the fairgrounds meet by winning the riding title by an astounding 21 wins. Giroux capped off the meet with a dominating win in the Louisiana Derby aboard Gunrunner. Giroux's mounts led North America in earnings with over $780,000 and finished the week with 6 wins, 3 seconds, and 3 third place finishes. Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft, is now available in a digital version formatted for your ebook reader, complete with live links to videos of key races featured in the text. A significant portion of the proceeds go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For excerpts, testimonials, and to order, visit JockeyTalk360.com. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 Weekly Update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at JockeyTalk.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I am Christina McManigal, and I'm joined tonight by jockey Lane Luzzi. And prior to the commercial break, we were just talking about Lane's first victory and his second victory, which came on the very same day. And Lane, that was on December 4th, 2015. Not very long ago, really. You've quickly come a long way since then. And what have you learned as far as your riding style and ways you look to perfect it? What have you learned since then?
You know, like I said before, when you break out of the gate after your first race, just the more and more I ride, you're able to see how the race shapes up differently in front of you. I can now read the form, and I can see, you know, where I want to put my horse in the race to maybe give my horse the best chance to win. I mean, if I want to go to the lead with the horse, you know, I know how to put one in the position I want to now, and that's obviously a huge advantage in a race. If you could put your horse where you want to be, that's half the battle. And I've learned how to do that very quick.
Do you watch your replays, Lane? Do you study how you look aboard a horse and try to perfect that?
Yeah, I watch every replay about 10 times a night. That's pretty much how the second half of my day goes, watching replays, looking about how I finish on each horse. It's, depending on how the horse is built, it's actually quite different how you feel aboard them. So just, like I said, I ride the Equisizer every day as well. So finishing and just trying to look good is very important to me.
You say you study the form, Lane, and what do you do when you study a race and you decide that maybe you should put your horse in a specific spot? Maybe you think you have the speed in a race, and then you go out to the paddock and you talk with the trainer and they tell you to do something completely different. What do you do in that kind of a situation?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, obviously, you have to do what the trainer says to keep that business. And, you know, it's not always up to the jockey what you want to do. Like you said, you could have a total different plan than the trainer. But, you know, if you do what the trainer says and, you know, the horse doesn't run good, or, you know, maybe the horse even runs well and then they look very smart. But for the most part, if you do what they say, they really can't get upset with you. But, you know, if you have a free rein to do what you want, you know, like I said, I read the form and I could see, you know, maybe I could sit off the pace. Maybe I could sit mid-pack to get the best out of my horse.
Now that hard work has been paying off, Lane. I believe it was February 6th. You had a riding hat trick. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
What do you remember about that day, and what do you remember about the horses?
You know, it's funny because you look at the form, you look at the races that you ride beforehand, and, you know, some days you think you're going to win three and, you know, you end up not hitting the board, or some days you don't think you have a shot and you end up winning two. I actually, I liked a lot of the horses that I rode that day, and, you know, I just felt very comfortable. I rode some good races, I rode some smart races, and, you know, at the end of the day, we won three winners, and it was a great day. It was just it was something I was looking forward to, is winning three races. I had a lot of two-win days prior, so to get the third win was a good feeling.
You mentioned riding two winners prior to that day, and we're friends on Facebook, Lane. I remember reading one post of yours said, 7 degrees can't stop me, a riding double, and I had to laugh because I rode in Maryland myself, and I remember those cold days in the wintertime, and I am not fond of the cold weather at all. But what do you do for that kind of weather? That it is very difficult when you can't feel your hands and you're trying to ride a race. What do you do?
Well, to be totally honest, the cold weather, honestly, I enjoy the cold weather. So on a, it sounds funny, on a 7-degree day, it really doesn't bother me. But, I mean, the Maryland Jockey Club, they take care of us. They don't send us out to the track with 20 minutes to post. We normally go out around 6 or 7. But other than that, just dress warm as you can. I mean, like I said, the post parades are very quick, so sometimes it could be a battle, especially, you know, you're behind horses, the dirt's hitting your face. It hurts more when your face is colder. So you just you bundle up the best you can and you go on with it, really.
Do you wear a face mask and gloves and all of that?
It depends. It has to be really, really cold for me to wear gloves. There was a day it was 20 degrees, and I like to wear my gloves during the post parade, and then I put them in my back in my silk. So the gloves aren't my favorite. So if I don't have to wear them, I don't really. Same thing with the face mask. If I don't have to wear it, I choose not to.
See, I loved the face mask because that keeps the dirt from hitting you in the face. But you know,
I know it. I've been told that all the time.
That's too funny, Lane. But don't worry, summer's coming along, although you said you enjoy the cold weather. I think you're crazy, but I guess you are from New York, so I guess that does make sense. But you mentioned earlier on in the show traveling, and as I also mentioned, I remember those days very well. You ride in Maryland on racing days there, and then you travel to parks, and then Penn National at night. Have you been to Charlestown yet?
I haven't been to Charlestown, no.
You have not been to Charlestown yet. Well, get ready. Get tied on, as they
say.
Yeah,
right.
I was going to ask you about that. It's just it's a bull ring. So, of course, to our listeners who don't know why I mentioned that, it's a bull ring, and it is kind of an interesting track to ride. But let's go back to talking about Penn National and parks. And what did you find there when you first shipped in to Penn National and parks about the riders and the racetrack, and what did you notice about those places?
Well, obviously the track, there is a mile track, and at Laurel we have a mile and an eighth track, so the turns are a bit tighter. As for the jockeys, they all ride a little bit different. The at Penn National, typically you get faster fractions. A lot of guys like to send their horses to the front, so depending on how you like to look at that, you could ride a different style of race. But for the most part, it's just how they ride, how the horses are. They're a bit different. But for the most part, it's the same horse racing for the most part.
Do you study the races prior to determine what kind of track bias might exist as far as if speed's holding or if closers are winning the race?
Yes, that's a huge thing that I like to look at, actually. You know, lately speed's been playing well at Laurel, so if I get a chance to put one on the front, I'm not afraid to do it. You know, a lot of my wins have come from the front end, and, you know, I don't want to get a reputation that, you know, I'm a jockey that likes to put horses on the front end just because, but I also don't want to be looked at as someone who's afraid to do it. I don't mind going to the front end. I don't mind taking a horse back, whatever I have to do to win the race. But if track bias is going to play a factor, I will definitely, keep it in mind when reading the form and while I'm breaking out of the gate.
You mentioned you like the front end lane, and that's very understandable, and it's good that you don't want to get labeled as that just because you want to be known as a well-rounded rider. But one of the key factors to being a successful speed rider is to break out of the gate very well. And how do you do that, Lane? And would you say you're a good gate rider?
You know, I'd say I've become a very good gate rider since I first started. And, you know, it's just all about timing. Sometimes it's a little bit about luck. If your horse isn't standing in the gate as well as possible, it's a little bit harder to get the best possible break. But for the most part, if your horse is standing okay, you know, it's just all about timing. Just trying to get your horse out there the best you can. But, you know, if your horse has a little bit of speed and your horse is known to break out well, it's not that challenging to get a very clean break and to get out there quick.
Jockey Lane Luzzi joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Elaine, so we've described your very busy schedule, and take us through a typical day in the life of Lane.
All right, well, it all depends where I have to be. Most mornings I'm at Laurel Park, and I get there right before the track opens, and if I don't have anything scheduled that day to work, I'll walk around, see if I could, you know, help out anything, gallop one, maybe breeze one for someone who needs some help. But on most mornings, I do have something scheduled to breeze. So, you know, after I breeze my horses in the morning, do my morning work, whatever needs to be done, on a race day, I'll head to the jockey's room, study the form, maybe get Sunny for breakfast. And then by that time, you know, we're pretty close to post, and then the races start.
And what do you do after the races?
Normally I just go home. By the end of the day, I'm real tired, and I go home, watch replays, I print out the past performances for the next day, and you know, see what we have to look forward to for tomorrow.
Do you ever go to the gym? Is that something that you work on, or do you just rely on working horses in the morning, which in itself is a very good workout?
I do a lot of running, actually. I did track in high school, and just long distance running is something I've always liked to do. It always feels good to, after a long day, maybe go for a little run just to keep fit, just to feel good.
You mentioned track in high school, Lane. Did you play any other sports in high school?
I played every sport possible. I played soccer, I played baseball, I did track. A sport that I actually really enjoyed was wrestling, that I really didn't start until ninth grade, when the coach saw that I was one of the lighter people that was athletic, and they needed someone to fill that weight class. So I ended up doing that, and I fell in love with it.
It's funny you mentioned that, Lane. We've had so many successful jockeys who wrestled in high school, and it's funny the relation there with riding, because I guess it's because weight is also something that's involved in wrestling, and so you learn how to control your weight, etc. But that is very cool. You were a wrestler. Very, very cool to know. And Lane, if you hadn't decided to become a jockey, what would you have done?
You know, that's a good question. You set yourself up to be a jockey your entire life. It's kind of hard to say what I would do if I didn't want to become one, but I'd probably like to do something in the industry, you know, maybe training, you know, being an agent maybe, but, you know, my heart is being a jockey, and that's always what I've wanted to do. So it is hard to say at this stage that, you know, I'm finally doing what I'm always wanted to do, and I'm having some success doing it. It's hard to tell you what I would be doing if I wasn't doing this.
And as I said, Lane, you're off to a very, very good start. And just back a couple months ago, you rode your first winner. You're already doing so well. What has been your favorite moment so far during your career?
You know what? It's kind of hard to say a specific moment. I mean, I get up every day and I look forward to the day ahead. You know, this is a dream come true for me. This is always what I've wanted to do. So, you know, even some days where, you know, you don't win a race, so you don't have a busy day, you know, I could go home at night and say, you know, I'm a jockey. I've made it to the point where, you know, I'm doing what I've always wanted to do. So, you know, I guess if I could give you a moment, it'd probably be my first win. I mean, there was nothing like my first win. I'll never forget the feeling crossing the finish line first, taking a win photo. But, you know, the more and more you do that, the more and more you want to win. So I'm just hungry for more wins. I'm enjoying myself, and, you know, I'm just living the dream.
Living the dream, folks. And Lane, I forgot to ask you, after your first winner, did the other jockeys initiate you properly after the race?
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
What did they do?
Oh, geez, I got eggs, I got buckets of water, buckets of whatever they could find in the room. A few guys sat out, but there was a few culprits that really enjoyed getting me, especially the guys that knew me from when I was growing up.
That's awesome. You had to clean up then and go in the race later on in that day. So
think I sat in the jocks room with a pile of eggs in my head watching the replay 20 times over before I cleaned up.
That's fantastic. Lane, like you said, a day you will never forget. And there are a few other days I'd like to mention that stuck out when I was doing my research here for the show. And that was you rode final prospect to a fourth place finish on March 19th for trainer Gary Capuano in the Ben's Cat Stakes. And I mention that because that is quite the honor for an apprentice, given that you don't get the weight allowance. And so describe the horse, describe how you achieved the mount.
Well, it's funny. I rode final prospect 4 times now. The first time I rode him, we got caught in a speed duel going 3/4, and we ran a good race that day. We were beating 2 lengths. We finished 3rd, and Gary put me back on the horse again in allowance, and he told me just try to take him back, try to get him to relax, and I believe that was going 7/8 of a mile, and, you know, I was sitting on a lot of horse the whole way behind horses, and when it was time to go, I swung him out, and he ran for me, and we ended up winning big that day. After that, I rode him actually in a stake again. I rode him in the Fireplug, in which we were fourth beating 3 lengths, and we didn't get a good trip. We were we had a horse cut in front of us a little late in the stretch and kind of killed his momentum to go on a little bit to get a placing. But, that's pretty much how I got the mount, and I've retained it so far.
Well, hopefully continue to do well with Final Prospect. And another day I'd like to mention, Lane, is you were aboard trainer Alfredo Velasquez's 1,000th win at Parks with a horse by the name of Rosie My Way. And Freddie Velasquez, of course, a very successful trainer there at Parks. And describe to us what that felt like to achieve his 1,000th victory.
To be honest, I didn't know that he was going for 1,000. I knew he was close, but I didn't know I'd actually be the one to get it for him. But I actually rode Rosie My Way prior to that, and I won as well. So she's a horse I do enjoy riding. But I remember the race was a 4-horse field. We sent her right on the lead and over a wet track, and she enjoyed the wet track before, and she's got natural early speed. So, we rode a good race that day, and she ran great. So we get back to the winner's circle, and I had a big sign for him that said, Alfredo Velasquez, 1,000 wins. And it was just a great feeling to be a part of something like that. I mean, it's a great achievement, 1,000 wins. He's been training for a numerous amount of years, and he does a great job with his horses. So it was an honor to be a part of something like that.
Before you know it, Lane, that will be you in the winner's circle with the 1,000 win sign there standing to celebrate that. So just keep up the good work. And so what goals are you working towards?
It's all about how this falls into place. The biggest goal I have is to make a career out of this. A lot of riders, they ride for a few years and, they either quit riding or they get too big. I want to do this for a lot of years. My dad's been riding since 1989 when he won the Eclipse Award. So, I like to make a career out of this. I'd like, in the short term, maybe I'd like to win an Eclipse Award. I mean, it's all about timing. It's a little bit of luck as well. So I'm not going to put it on my shoulders as of now. But if it's available and it's there, I want to win it. And, me and my agent, Scott Silver, we work hard every day trying to get on as many horses as possible and trying to get on a lot of winners. So you do what you have to do, and if those awards are there, why not go for them?
Following in your father's footsteps, of course, he has had so much success. And what about the immediate future here, Lane? Where are you going for the summer?
As of right now, I'll be at Pimlico, and then Maryland's actually staying open for the rest of the year right now, so it looks like I'll be at Delaware Park and I'll be at Laurel for the rest of the time, and wherever I have to be, I'll be.
Have car, will travel, right? Do you take yourself to all these different tracks, parks, Penn National? Do you drive?
Yeah, I go. I like to bring my friend Jack with me, who actually he put me on one of my first horses, a horse named Escrow Kid for Phantom Racing. And he's been a great friend to me. I live with him, and he's my age, so we both share a good love for the sport.
Hopefully he takes turns driving, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's fantastic. Like I said, I remember those days very well. I remember driving back from Penn National one night after the last race, and I had a flat tire, and that was a long day. And waking up at 5 the next morning wasn't easy. It's a hard life, but hey, Lane, it definitely pays off. And again, I want to talk about Scott Silver for a minute, and maybe members of our audience don't exactly know what an agent does. And so could you describe that for us?
Yeah, basically an agent, he's the one who books our mounts. If a trainer wants us on our horse, he or she, the trainer, will call my agent and we'll make sure that they get that spot for us at the draw. And then, of course, at the draw, the trainers, they, like I said, they book our mounts and, you know, they make sure we're on the horses that we're supposed to ride. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but it actually becomes quite controversial, especially if you're riding a lot of races and a lot of trainers want you. You might have 2-3 calls in a race, and, you know, obviously someone, they get upset, you don't ride their horse or this and that. And like I said, it just gets controversial, and it's not an easy job.
They kind of have to take some of the grief from people, right?
Yeah. Well, that's also part of the job. Absolutely. And, you know, you try to avoid that the best you can, but it's part of the game.
Now, agents typically have two journeymen and an apprentice rider. And does Scott Silver have any other jockeys?
Yes, he has Trevor McCarthy.
Trevor McCarthy, who, of course, did very well on the Maryland circuit as well, and his father also was a successful jockey. Do you and Trevor, do you get along well? Do you seek advice from Trevor?
Yeah, actually, I knew Trevor before I started riding when he came in to ship to Aqueduct a few days, and we get along. We're very competitive with each other, and you know, that's why I like Trevor so much. I admire the way he rides. I like the way he rides a race. He rides hard 100% of the time. And like I said, we're just very competitive with each other. He offers up his advice, and he's also been a great role model.
So, Lane, if someone asked you, say a young kid at the track, maybe in high school, if someone asked you what it takes to become a jockey, what would you tell them?
You know, besides just natural horse riding ability, you need to be able to talk to people. You need to obviously not be afraid. You need to have thick skin sometimes when dealing with different people. But, you know, besides, like I said, horse riding ability, you just need to be a hard worker and you need to enjoy yourself. If you don't enjoy the sport, enjoy the game 100%, then it's just definitely not for you. It's not a job that you work 5 days a week. It's 24/7, and that's a vital asset to have, is just being hardworking.
Definitely has to be your passion, Lane. You said it. And what things about your riding that you look at today, maybe your father calls you after a race, what things are you still working on to improve?
I'm still working on my finishing. I'm a pretty good finisher as of right now, but, you know, there's always room for improvement. I like the way my dad finishes on a horse, so if I could look like him in the year to come, I'd be very happy. you know, just riding more races, getting more experience. Turf season's getting ready to come along, so that's gonna be a little different. So, you know, I'm just trying to ride a lot of races, get the experience down, and then, you know, we'll make sure we're polished by then.
Turf season coming up soon. Have you ever breezed horses on the turf?
Yeah, I breezed a bunch, actually, in Saratoga.
Of course, and it is very different, but of course you sound like you have the right way of thinking as far as strategy and riding a smart race, which are all key elements to a successful turf rider. Lane, did you ever breeze horses in company with your father?
You know, that's something I never have done, actually, and it's something I've always wanted to do, something I was hoping to look forward to, but we never did get to breeze with one another.
And I guess you've never ridden a race with him yet, have you?
No.
Coming up. You got to get that done for sure. And has your family been out to Laurel, to Maryland, to watch you ride?
Yeah, they came down about a month ago to watch me ride. It was late December, I believe. It was my third or fourth winter that they came down for, and they didn't tell me they were coming down. I was getting ready to ride the first race of the card, and I look up and my dad's standing there in the jockey's room, and it was a good surprise, and it was a good day for them to come down. I ended up winning the race that day, so it was actually the first time my mom had ever, you know, watched me on a horse. She's never been around in the morning. It just I guess it kind of scares her, especially now that she gets two people to watch. So it was a cool experience.
What a great story, Lane. We're almost out of time here, but what a great story to have your family there for that win. I'm sure they will be there for many, many more. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure.
All the best to Lane Luzzi. If you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. You will also find a full schedule for every show on the Horse Racing Radio Network on our website. We bring you something new almost every day of the week. Check it out. Again, horseracingradio.net. Now, be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.